Hello and welcome to the Majlis, the podcast by Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty, focusing on Central Asia. I am Mohammed Tahir, your host here in Washington, D.C. Increasing presence of ISIS and Taliban fighters, reports of mass killing of innocent civilians, questions about the effectiveness of the Afghan forces, and growing concern in regional scale about deteriorating security situation. Things are not business as usual in northern Afghanistan. Now, on Tuesday, top Pakistani and Russian officials are heard saying that they are very preoccupied with what's happening in northern Afghanistan and by the expansion of ISIS influence. These comments followed earlier reports in which China appears to be looking at the possibilities of establishing some sort of military presence in northern Afghanistan, which, if true, must involve Tajikistan. All these developments lead us to one conclusion, that is, the conflict in northern Afghanistan is increasingly discussed in military terms in the regional level. And the question to be asked is, what is happening on the ground and what is next for the region? On today's Majlis, Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty, Central Asia podcast, we plan to discuss all these questions. To do so, I'm joined by Michael Semple, who's the professor at the Senator George Mitchell Institute for Global Peace, Security and Justice at the Queen's University, Belfast. His additional title given by BBC is the most respected Western expert on Afghanistan. We are very delighted to have you, Michael.
Thank you.
Thank you. And Jacob Zinn is joining us all the way from Vietnam, who is a Eurasia fellow at the Jamestown Foundation. Jacob is often found in and around China. Thank you for joining us, Jacob, today.
Thank you.
Very nice to have you. Josh Kosera is tuning in from Istanbul today, who's an American journalist with an eye on military affairs in Eurasia, also author of the recent EurasiaNet report on China's increasing military activities in northern Afghanistan. Josh, welcome on board.
Thanks for having me.
Very nice to have you. And yes, Bruce Panier is with us from Prague, who is the editor of Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty's Central Asia blog called Kushlok Awazi. Bruce, welcome.
Thank you very much.
Very nice to have you. Okay, so where to start? I know this is this week is a meeting in follow-up comments by the Pakistani and Russian ministers on northern Afghanistan are very important. Also, the growing military interest by China is equally crucial. Maybe we can come to those topics in a bit. Michael, you are the Afghanistan person here with 25 years residence in the region. I believe it's more than most of the Afghans. So the main reason why there are increasing hoo-ha about northern Afghanistan, tell us, what have you been hearing lately from the region?
Well, there are really two strands to this. One is on the military side and the other is on the political side. On the military side, we have seen over the past 10 months, Islamic State has established a toehold in northwestern Afghanistan. Right. There are, of the 400 Afghan districts, two of those in northwestern Afghanistan are now controlled by fighters who have declared their loyalty to Islamic State. And of course, that's got everybody wondering about, you know, what happens next? Do they expand? Do other members of the Taliban go over to them? Could they be a threat to the neighbors across the border in Central Asia? And that is only in northwestern Afghanistan. In northeastern Afghanistan, where the main Taliban movement has been pushing hard against government forces over the past 2 years, also some of the fighters there have claimed loyalty to Islamic State. In terms of the threats facing the Afghan government, this is still sort of a second-order threat. Hmm. You know, it's two districts out of 400. But, yeah, people worry, is it going to get worse? Now, that's all about what's happening on the military side. But alongside it, we've had a lot of confrontation on the political side, which is basically supporters of the Afghan government, or even people who are themselves meant to be part of the Afghan government, have been disputing the exercise of power. And this is the standoff that we've seen between the governor of northern Balkh province, Atta Mahmud Noor, and the central government in Kabul, as to whether he should step down and who has the right to push people out of their official positions. This really has grown into a very significant, perhaps the biggest political dispute that the Afghan government has faced. And basically, I think people are remembering history and they're going back to 91 and 92 and the final days of the Soviet-backed regime under Dr. Najib, where in those final days, it was a rebellion by senior military officials based in the north, which ultimately led to the toppling of that government. Now, I think we're in a very different situation, but it is unsurprising that everybody has sat up and taken note of a major political dispute centering around power brokers in the north. So you have a military side to it, is progressive Islamic State on the ground, and a political side, which is a sort of an internal dispute in the Afghan government.
Right. Michael, just to continue with you, also just to mention that Michael was one of the people who were expelled from Afghanistan a couple of years ago, and then I think he was the deputy chief of EU mission there. So, Michael, what are the main contributing elements to this? Like you mentioned, arrival of ISIS, the Taliban fighters, the local disputes, the clashing interests. We know northern Afghanistan was relatively a better place when you were there last time with the office. Mission. Now it is just situation has completely changed. What caused to these disputes that you have mentioned?
Well, to some extent, the development that we've seen on the military side, in other words, this emergence of Islamic State in northern Afghanistan, has as much to do with the politics of the Taliban movement as it has to do with anything being done wrong or right by the Afghan government. The main armed opposition group in Afghanistan is the Afghan Taliban movement. And for the past 16 or more years, they have been fighting an insurgency against the central government. And now they're basically facing a rebellion or defection from many of their fighters who are worried about the way that their insurgency or jihad is being waged. They have complaints about the allocation of power inside the movement. So actually, to my mind, what's driving the recruitment of fighters to Islamic State in northern Afghanistan is not any international development, and it's got very little to do with the sort of the stance of Islamic State, for example, in Syria. It's to do with the weakening of the Afghan Taliban movement. That the Islamic State, they have a tradition of exploiting local grievances, and they're actually exploiting grievances of the fighters of the Taliban movement to get themselves a toehold. So it's actually politics inside the Afghan insurgency which has created conditions for the emergence of Islamic State. But there's also a long tradition in Afghanistan, certainly for the past 210 years of international engagement in Afghanistan, going back to the days when you had Tsarist emissaries being sent across Central Asia and into Afghan territories at a time when the early British envoys were also visiting Kabul. I mean, since that time, there has been an obsession in Afghanistan with the foreign hand, with the idea that there are international powers or regional powers who have interest in Afghanistan, linking up with parties there and trying to do things. Now, thing is that there is a reality, but it's also a reality which is even easily exaggerated. So, for example, one of the comments which came out of the Pakistan Russia meeting this week was that the Americans might be trying to encourage the growth of Islamic State in northern Afghanistan. I've investigated this very carefully, and I can reassure you it is not true, that the rise of Islamic State in northwestern Afghanistan is completely driven by local factors.
But recently there were also reports coming out from northern Afghanistan about the presence of people from North Africa, from as far as from France, and I believe they are a new phenomena there. So how you read that fact, Michael?
If you read in the media reports of 400 foreign militants, then you have to divide by about 100 that the media reporting of the presence of foreign militants was inaccurate. A small number in the order of 12 or 15 foreign militants, predominantly people from Uzbekistan, veteran fighters from Uzbekistan, are present amongst the Islamic State fighters in northwestern Afghanistan. But there is a long tradition of of misrepresenting and exaggerating these. There is no evidence to back up the claims that there are hundreds of foreign fighters in northwestern Afghanistan. There are no bodies. There are no names. There are no telephone intercepts. All there are rumors spread by some people on the ground. I am confident in the reporting that I get from people in the area who can name something like 12 to 15. That's the kind of level we're talking about. That is not a major factor in the Afghan conflict.
Okay, let's expand this. Jacob, you look into these security-related problems in the region. Is there anything you would like to add to what Michael has just said?
I would only add about the Central Asian foreign fighters in northern Afghanistan in terms of how we assess whether they're there or how many they're there. One other thing that you can look at are the videos that they release. Yeah. Of course, they're propaganda videos, so there's an incentive to make it seem like you're bigger. But ever since Russia began pounding Idlib in Syria, there's been increased rhetoric from the Uzbek groups in Syria about Afghanistan. And in the past year and a half, there's been an increasing number of videos from the Al-Qaeda-aligned Uzbek groups in Syria now featuring themselves in Afghanistan, as well as sometimes the Uyghur groups. So I think it would not be surprising to me if some of the Uzbeks that had been in Syria found a way to relocate to Afghanistan or to reconnect with other Uzbeks in Afghanistan. But as Michael said, that doesn't necessarily decisively change the nature of the conflict, but it could be a trend to continue to look at.
Just to look into this a little bit from the different aspect, Josh, if you like, Bruce, feel free to jump in. You know, the fact that these security developments are taking place just right across the border to Central Asia in the Afghan side, and also it involves some Central Asian fighters there. So how much of these increasing instability in the northern Afghanistan has to do with its proximity with Central Asia, or it is not the factor here?
I doubt it. I mean, from my outside perspective, it seems to me like it's just sort of, this is the same thing that's been going on in the rest of Afghanistan, finally reaching northern Afghanistan. And it doesn't seem like any of the dynamics that I could see happening in northern Afghanistan are anything coming from Central Asia. They're coming from other parts of Afghanistan.
Bruce, the same question to you a little bit. Let me try to explain that in a different way. Not necessarily that people are coming from Central Asia, but the fact that things are changing for the worst in Afghan towns just across the border from Central Asia. My curiosity is does it has to do anything with Central Asia at all?
Well, you know, I would say this is, it's kind of strange. It's like secondhand Central Asia stuff. You know, the problems in northern Afghanistan got much worse a few years ago when Pakistan launched its operation in the tribal areas. You know, and the military chased a bunch of, especially the foreign militants out, and a bunch of the Central Asian militants who had been in the tribal areas, who had left Central Asia 10 years before, you know, or over the course of the years, got driven back into Afghanistan and ended up going into the north, you know, closer to the places they'd come from, Uzbekistan, Tajikistan. You know, so you had that wave of people that came through that removed from Central Asia by several years, if, like I said, not a decade. And now you have with the crumbling of the forces, you know, ISIS forces and other militant groups in Syria and Iraq, you have a movement of Central Asian fighters that were there who left Central Asia, or more likely they left from Russia. They were migrant laborers that left Central Asia, went to Russia, and then ended up in Iraq or Syria. And now they are a few, we don't know, it's not a lot, but some few seem to have figured that Syria and Iraq are lost causes, and they've made their way, coming from the other side through Iran as part of the trafficking that goes through back in there. So it's not so much that they're coming directly from Central Asia into northern Afghanistan as that they were in other conflict zones and have been driven out and have made their way back to what is still a conflict zone where groups like them or groups affiliated with them are operating at the moment.
Okay. In these circumstances, what's the point the Pakistani and Russian foreign ministers were trying to make the other day? So what does these comments say about their future plans and where the reports about presence of Chinese military activities falls in this equation and where all these developments places Central Asia in a bigger picture? Let's continue the Majlis talking about this and many other questions shortly. Hey everyone, before we get into the second part of the show, just a quick reminder that if you really like Majlis podcast, there's a real chance that you will also like my other radio show that's called Gandhara Podcast. The show discusses latest developments in Pakistan and Afghanistan from local perspective. And the podcast is published in every second week on Radio Free Europe Radio Liberty's Gandhara website. It's a totally must-follow discussion for foreign policy nerds with interest in the region. First, let me recap the debate that today on the Majlis, Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty, Central Asia podcast. In the light of growing military talk in the region, we are discussing deteriorating security situation in northern Afghanistan along the border with Central Asia. Joining me in the discussion are Michael Simple, professor at the Senator George Mitchell Institute for Global Peace, Security and Justice at the Queen's University, Belfast. Jacobson, Eurasian fellow at the Jamestown Foundation. George Kosara, Eurasia Net editor and journalist specializing in military affairs in former Soviet Union. Bruce Panier, editor of Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty, Central Asia blog called Kishlok Owozi. I am Mohammed Tahir, host of the Majlis here in Washington, D.C. Welcome back, gentlemen. So just to go back to you, Michael, it's not to raise a doubt about credibility of the reports or comments, but the expression of any concern about northern Afghanistan comes together with its possible implications to Central Asia. So when Central Asians look towards Afghanistan, what do they see across the border?
Yes, good question. I think what we got to in the discussion so far is that, you know, if instability is crossing the border, we can be quite clear in which direction it would flow. Central Asia is not destabilizing northern Afghanistan, but that there is a risk of northern Afghanistan destabilizing Central Asia. I think that's where we've got to. And the discussion that we had between the foreign ministers was basically trying to talk up that risk, saying that they are concerned that the news of the development of Islamic State suggests that there is a risk of the instability, terrorism from Afghanistan going across the border and leading to formation of groups or attacks in the Central Asian states. Now, it's one of these things which clearly not happening on any meaningful scale at the moment. If it were for it to happen in Afghanistan, I think the reality is that if there were a collapse in central power in Afghanistan, so if something happened, like, for example, the U.S. withdrew its support to the government in Kabul, then, of course, that the militants who currently are not present in large numbers in northern Afghanistan, if they were given a free run and were able to go back to the situation we had sort of pre 9/11, where they were actually able to run training camps, proper formal military camps around Mazar-e-Sharif, then that starts to get more of a threat to Central Asia. You know, look, we've spent the past sort of 15 minutes talking about militants, but at the start of my presentation, I actually raised the issue of political stability in Afghanistan, and that's probably more critical to the whole piece. That if there really were a breakdown in political stability, that's what would create the opportunity for militants to consolidate themselves and start thinking about operations back into Central Asia, something which they simply cannot do at the moment. So if I were in the position of His Excellency Lavrov or his staff, I would be saying, look at what you can do to beef up the Afghan government, maintain political stability, ensure harmonious relations between the bits of the Afghan government, which are from northern Afghanistan and the others in the center. They should be, that's what you should be paying attention to, rather than just, you know, counting militants and saying, you know, am I right that it's 15 or are there actually 50?
Right. Interesting. Jacob, you know, the variations that Michael has just mentioned, talking about these different types of problem exist in northern Afghanistan. And also he said that there is no immediate threat to Central Asia. But looking to northern Afghanistan from Central Asia, what is your assessment of what Central Asians are seeing happening there?
Well, first I'll bring up the Islamic State factor. Mm-hmm. And I think in many respects, it is a sort of boogeyman because it scares a lot of people. Mm-hmm. So it's always something that a country can bring up to justify security expenditures or security alliances with other countries. But one thing I think it's important to recognize the Islamic State presence in Afghanistan is that even though it might be connected to local concerns now, if you look 3 to 5 years down the road, if the Islamic State network still exists and maintains strength, then the Islamic State, if it can communicate with its brains, wherever they're located, presumably Syria now, but maybe in the future somewhere else, then the way that Islamic State acts in the region could be quite a bit different than the Taliban. The Taliban is an enemy that the Central Asian states dislike, but at least they know the organization for well over a decade or two now. But Islamic State might have a different way of operating. They like to stir the pot. We've already seen a few Islamic State claims in the region, like in Kyrgyzstan. So Islamic State may have an incentive to try to do something bold across a border, say into Uzbekistan or Tajikistan, at the least to get publicity in a way that the Taliban never would because of its diplomatic concerns. And I think that's something that Central Asian states may need to look at sometime in the future, especially as foreign fighters begin leaving Syria and Iraq.
So what you are saying is that when they look into northern Afghanistan, ISIS is the first thing that comes to their mind?
I think it's among the things that comes to their mind, although I don't even think it's necessarily coming to mind for the right reasons. I think they may invoke the organization as a sort of boogeyman factor. I don't necessarily think that they understand the strategy of Islamic State to try to provoke and to try to gain attention, and they're necessarily preparing for it in the right way.
Bruce, Josh, do you agree with the assessment so far?
Yeah, I would agree with what Michael said about the, you know, the kind of the worst case scenario that if there's a collapse of central authority in Afghanistan, that's the circumstance under which Central Asia might have something to worry about. But then I would also add that, you know, before September 11th, the situation in Central Asia was very different than it is now, and that those Central Asian states were much less stable and therefore much more vulnerable to incursions and so on from Afghanistan. That's changed a lot since then, and those states are quite a bit more capable of managing things inside their borders. And so, you know, I would just even amplify what Michael said about the fact that things would have to go really, really, really bad for there to be a kind of significant spillover into Central Asia.
Just to press on that, Josh, you know, there is no immediate threat that the central authority in Afghanistan collapse. So I want to believe that China or Russia knows this better than us. Then why there is a constant news coming out from northern Afghanistan, especially Badakhshan, that China is kind of thinking to establish a military presence? What is it for? What's it for? You know, I know the report is not 100% confirmed, but, you know, I spoke to a couple of people whom I believe that they are in the position of knowing that. They are not ready to say that this is a military base, but again, some activities are taking place there with the involvement of Chinese soldiers. What is that for?
Yeah, well, I would say, I mean, first, the Russian and the Chinese situations are very different. And Russia, you know, this is an old story. They've had an interest in kind of ginning up the threat from Afghanistan for a long time for the purpose of drawing the Central Asian states more closely to Russia with the promise of military aid and being in the Collective Security Treaty Organization and so on. So that's the Russian story. The Chinese thing is newer and more difficult to figure out. I mean, their interest clearly is China's security and the fact that you have this little tiny border with Afghanistan, and China is, as you know, worried about Uyghur militant groups who they say, Michael would probably be better placed to kind of assess how many actual Uyghur militants there are in Wakhan these days, but they appear to be worried about that. And so I personally think that these reports seem quite credible of a Chinese military facility of some sort that they're building for the Afghan armed forces. They seem credible to me. I mean, Fergana talked to a good number of Afghan officials on the record saying that, yes, China is doing this. China approached us with this idea. We're going to do it. So, I mean, that seems to me to be very credible.
Mm. Michael, the Chinese military activities in Badakhshan, what is your insight to this? And also, is it only for Uyghurs?
Oh, well, I mean, I think we'd have to look at it in the context of, you know, what is the Kabul government trying to do? And the Kabul government is trying hard to reassure its neighbors, including the Central Asian states and the and China, that, you know, it is taking the issue of international militancy seriously, and, you know, that it's on top of the case. So, for, although I don't have any specific information on what has been discussed or agreed with China just now, it would be consistent with that approach. That if Afghanistan wants good relations with China, it wants access to Chinese investment, and it wants Chinese political support. So, if the Chinese go to the Afghans with an ask, saying, you know, we'd like to cooperate with you on, you know, provide some security, would be involved in some security cooperation to help, you know, clamp down on Uyghur militants in Badakhshan, it's quite possible that the Afghan security officials would say, well, if that makes you feel better about us, we'll do it. Because, as you know, we are committed to ensuring that our soil is not used against any other power. I think that would be the thinking in Kabul.
Mm. Bruce, now turning to Russia, what Russia is trying to achieve in Afghanistan? I'm sure that you have seen latest that Russia thinks that Afghanistan's situation has to be dealt with anti-terrorism body of Shanghai Cooperation Organization. So first, what is that Russia is trying to achieve and how it is seen by Central Asians?
I think the Central Asians, you know, Josh mentioned that Russia warning the Central Asian states about the threat from northern Afghanistan is decades old now. Mm. The actors change every now and then. It's generally been the Taliban, although now they've hooked onto this Islamic State. These rumors of the Islamic State roaming around, and they're reminding the Central Asians fairly regularly that this could be a problem for them. You know, it's interesting to think how Russia could use the Shanghai Cooperation Organization for purposes in Afghanistan. Admittedly, with the Chinese somewhat upping their game, I guess that's fair to say, in Afghanistan by providing more open help certainly than they have in the past. You know, that seems to be a basis for the old Shanghai Cooperation Organization to do something about it. But the new Shanghai Cooperation Organization that does have India and Pakistan as members is a little bit harder to get anything together. I mean, let's face it, the U.S. has been trying to get Pakistan on board with helping out in Afghanistan for years, and that hasn't worked. And I can't believe that just because China and Russia, and especially India, would all of a sudden agree to some kind of policy or some kind of moves that would motivate Pakistan to change the stance that it's had for quite a while. You know, again, as people have said in this broadcast, the Russians have an interest in Central Asia, and one of their biggest tools for promoting their interest in Central Asia is to warn about the threat in Afghanistan. But the Central Asian governments have been hearing this for a while, and you kind of got to wonder, I'm sure they listen to it, but it probably doesn't get their attention quite the way it did in 1998. For example,
Another question also kind of very intriguing to me is like the threat in northern Afghanistan and its possible impact to Russia. Obviously, if it affects in any way to Russia, it has to affect first Central Asia. So all these news is coming from Moscow, from all the other capitals beyond Central Asia. Why Central Asians are silent about this? Bruce, do you want to continue?
Well, I don't think they are entirely. I mean, let's look at... it was Josh mentioned a while ago that there's some possibility that there was somebody in Kyrgyzstan that they caught that was related to this group. But, look at what happens with these people that supposedly got the black flag of ISIS, Daesh, that raised it. I mean, the governments, the Tajik and Uzbek governments come right after them and give them just for having the flag. I mean, this is serious jail time, more than a decade in prison just for having for being accused and found guilty of owning a black flag. It's not something they ignore, certainly. And they're trying to send a message with these stiff sentences that if you're caught involved with these groups or this particular group at all, we're going to come down hard on you. There's no doubt about it. So it's not like they're neglecting it, certainly. But they have these guarantees, from multiple states that they'll get help, whether it's the Shanghai Cooperation Organization, whether it's strictly a bilateral deal with Russia or with China. They do have some guarantees that they'll get help if they need it. And I think, while I would say Daesh is probably the worst threat because it's a non-state actor. The fact is that they're just not that strong in northern Afghanistan that they could pull off much. And the security networks from the governments in Central Asia are watching this.
Jacob, actually, I should have asked this question earlier a little bit. So is there any discussion in China about the Chinese military activity in northern Afghanistan? What's it for? How they see it? What's the future you see for Chinese military in there?
It's clear that in an official capacity, China is claiming that there's nothing to look at in Afghanistan. But as the other commenters have said, there is some credibility to the claim that China is active in northeastern Afghanistan. It makes sense that China would want to be quiet about it, because in general, when China engages in military efforts overseas in areas that have traditionally been in the sphere of influence of other powers, and this includes Africa as well, China likes to underplay its role in military activity. So this is very consistent with its activities abroad. But what we are also seeing in northern Afghanistan, as you mentioned, with Russia getting more involved and the U.S. future in Afghanistan unclear, is perhaps a very minor type of the game that we see in Syria, where various major players are trying to build their sphere of influence in a very unstable area. So in Syria, you see Turkey, Russia, Iran, the U.S., various countries trying to get involved. So what we might be seeing in northern Afghanistan is Russia trying to build various proxies and allies to become the major international player in northern Afghanistan, but maybe China can hold its own sphere of influence in certain parts close to its border. And China is also concerned about the very large number of Uyghurs in Syria and the very influential role that the Uyghur jihadist organization, the Turkestan Islamic Party, plays in Syria. And although they are quite absent from Afghanistan in the past few years, there is also the concern that if Idlib gets retaken by the Assad government in Syria, then all of these Uyghurs are presumably going to go back to Turkey. And if they want to continue their jihad, they might end up finding their way back to Afghanistan and then threatening Chinese borders from there. That's more of a midterm future issue, but it likely is playing into China's calculations.
You brought us to a very interesting point, Jacob. Turning to you, Josh, reading your article on EurAsianet, it was very interesting to see or read the impression of some of the Russian experts about reported Chinese military activity in northern Afghanistan. Do you see there's some sort of uneasiness on behalf of Russians about what China is apparently doing there?
I haven't seen very much Russian commentary on this new Chinese base, but a couple of years ago, as you might recall, China announced this quadrilateral cooperation mechanism. There's another word in there that I'm forgetting. Anyway, it's a quadrilateral security group between Afghanistan, Pakistan, China, and Tajikistan. And it had a kind of an unclear mandate about what exactly it was supposed to do, but somehow was dealing with security. And the fact that they included Tajikistan in that, and not Russia, I think set off some alarm bells in Russia that Russia always thinks of the Central Asian states as its sphere of influence. And there's the Shanghai Cooperation Organization, which China leads, but Russia's part of that. This new quadrilateral organization, Russia is not part of, and that clearly you saw some alarm coming out of Russia about that, okay, this is the sign. We've always been worried that China is going to one day usurp us in Central Asia, and now it's beginning. So I think there is that, and they're probably not wrong to think that. And I think that, every one of these new developments is going to make Russia a little bit more worried. And, in terms of the Chinese military base, that will have a really direct tie with the Central Asian states, namely Tajikistan, because you can't get in a land vehicle from China to Afghanistan. That border is impassable. So you have to go through Tajikistan. And there have already been reports over the last couple of years of people seeing Chinese military vehicles transiting Tajikistan on their way to Afghanistan, to the Wakhan Corridor. That's not a huge amount of Chinese military presence in Central Asia, but it's something.
Right.
And yeah, for sure, Russia is looking at that closely.
Mm-hmm. Sorry for that, Michael. We just ended up talking mostly about the military aspect of this. But again, focusing on that, what is your interpretation of the comments made by Pakistani and Russian foreign minister or increasing flirting between these two nations about dealing security or militant challenges jointly? Where this taking the region, and is it something really serious?
When you look at Afghanistan as a problem and as a problem of security for its neighbors, the neighbors face two big questions. One is, do we respond to a security threat with a purely security response, like sort of, go after the militants? Or do we use political and diplomatic action, try and make sure that there's no room for those militants to operate? And do we operate inside a sort of a broad international consensus, basically UN mechanisms or mechanisms which link to the Kabul government, or do we try and go it alone? One of the reasons that, one way or another, some good things have happened over the past 60 years in Afghanistan is because actually, most of the powers, most of the time, actually have still stayed within a sort of an international consensus. They've, one way or another, whatever their disagreements on some things, they've worked together with the UN and with the Kabul government on Afghanistan. And this kind of flirting that you describe is... it's about their play with the United States. It's about the issue of pressure which people are trying to bring, particularly the U.S. is trying to bring on Pakistan to cooperate more on counterterrorism. But until now, the calculation, I think, even in Moscow, has been that overall, Russia and Central Asia's interests are served by seeing a success of international UN efforts, Kabul government to stabilize Afghanistan. They have not taken a decision to operate against that, to somehow come up with some kind of alternative to the current order inside Afghanistan. But by flirting with each other, they say, you know what? If everything falls apart in Kabul, we've got other ways of working.
Interesting. Yeah, unfortunately, we have to conclude the discussion. Coming to the final points, Jacob, maybe we can start with you. Now, Russia thinks that Afghanistan situation should be dealt with the anti-terrorism body of Shanghai Cooperation Organization. And we have heard China is thinking militarily, at least on some level, about northern Afghanistan. So where is this taking the dynamics of conflict in that part of the world, northern Afghanistan? It is Central Asia borders.
It's an interesting case because we on this program have also discussed the Shanghai Cooperation Organization before and noted about India and Pakistan joining and how that might lead to a change in how the organization operates. And given that India and Pakistan are both South Asian countries, does this mean that the SCO, Shanghai Cooperation Organization, can now play a more active role in Afghanistan? I don't necessarily see that happening, but if Russia is trying to use the Shanghai Cooperation in Afghanistan, it's an interesting case of Russia trying to leverage it for its own advantage, because there have been other cases where, say, China has tried to leverage it for its own advantage, and various countries try to leverage it in different ways. But I still see China being somewhat hesitant to use the organization in Afghanistan. It can get boggled down. It's still seen as a Chinese organization. It would make the international image of China seen as challenging the U.S. because the U.S. has been in Afghanistan so long. So I could see Russia trying to use the organization in Afghanistan as a way to sort of diffuse the perception that it's Russia doing the activities in the region. But I don't see that going too far at this point.
Interesting. Okay, just the final points, Bruce and Josh. Now, in this military talk involving also the three regional powers, if you include Pakistan too, so what impact you see it is having going forward on Central Asia?
I think that it's basically just, if anything, We see a sort of a shift towards China and away from Russia in terms of the balance of power, that China is inexorably playing a bigger and bigger role security-wise, both in Afghanistan and in the ex-Soviet Central Asian states. And I think sort of by definition, the Russian presence, even though it's still stronger for now, is probably on the decline.
Bruce?
I don't see a conflict of interest here really too much, not certainly not at the moment. You know, the Chinese military, the alleged Chinese military base, is an interesting situation because it's not like they're, I've never seen that anyone thought they were actually going to station Chinese troops there. It's a case of the Chinese building things for the Afghan government army so that they can better project their strength in that particular region. And we know that's a remote region, and we know that the Afghan government has had a hard time supplying its forces or even being able to send very many forces up there. So I would think from the Central Asians' point of view, and even the Russians' point of view, that this is nothing but a plus. If the Chinese are willing to give material aid and help to Afghan forces in this remote corner, which admittedly has gotten much hotter in the last few years, and of course is not that far from the Pakistani tribal areas, I think it serves everyone's interests, you know, the governments anyway, in the region and the involved interested parties very well.
Okay, thank you very much, Bruce Panier, editor of Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty, Central Asia blog, Kishlak Owozi. And big thanks goes to Michael Simple, professor at the Senator George Mitchell Institute for Global Peace, Security and Justice at the Queen's University, Belfast, and Josh Kosira, Eurasia Net editor and journalist specializing in military affairs in former Soviet Union, and Jacob Zen, Eurasia Fellow at the Jamestown Foundation. Thank you, colleagues, for joining us today.
Pleasure.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you. This is it from me, Mohammed Tahir, host of the Majlis, Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty, Central Asia podcast. Until next week, bye-bye.